Good morning. Today is February the 13th of 2020, and this is Lloyd Rain in the almost always sunny city of Yuma, Arizona, reading selections from the Yuma Sun newspaper. Since Yuma is the county's largest city, almost all the county's administrative functions and, of course, its newspaper are located here. Yuma County lays in the furthermost southwest corner of Arizona, bordered on the west by California and on the south by the country of Mexico. In this half-hour program, I will cover the Yuma weather, selected articles from the Yuma Sun pertinent to Yuma County, and occasionally some public interest information. Here's a summary of the weather for today, February the 13th, 2020, Thursday. For today, our high temperature will be 69 degrees Fahrenheit. Normal high for this date, 73, and record high for this date, 87. That occurred in 2018, just 2 years ago. Today's low, 48 degrees. Normal low for this date, 50, and the record low for this date, 40. That occurred in the year 2004. Sky condition today, partly cloudy, possibly as much as 50% sky coverage. Wind speed, 5 miles per hour, if any, from the northeast. And the precipitation forecast today, 0 inches of rainfall. Year-to-date accumulation, 0.33 inches. We got all of that just 2 days ago when it rained on Monday and partially Tuesday. The normal year-to-date accumulation by this date for since January 1st, 0.50. So we're kind of on the way to catching up to what's called normalcy. The highest temperature this date in the lower 48 states will be 89 degrees. That will occur sometime today in Sebring, Florida. The lowest temperature this date in the lower 48 states, minus 29 degrees. That will occur sometime today in Albany, New York. And for you Canadians who choose to spend your winters here in our sunny climate, here's a taste of your home temperatures given in most of your major cities going from west to east, all in degrees Fahrenheit, and with the high first and the low second. For Vancouver, 45 and 30. Calgary, 43 and 19. Winnipeg, 0 and minus 8. Toronto, 34 and 1. Ottawa, 28 and minus 8. And Montreal, 30 and 0. Aren't you glad you're here this week? This concludes the weather portion of our broadcast. We now proceed with selected articles from the Yuma Sun newspaper. Our first article today, top of the front page of the Yuma Sun, is entitled, Governor's Staff Presents Proposed Budget in Yuma. Subtitle, Attendees Note Lack of Local Information, but Appreciate Briefing. Written by Mara Naub of the Yuma Sun. Low on information specific to Yuma County, a briefing by Governor Ducey's staff on Tuesday offered a view of his overall proposed state budget for fiscal year 2021. Staff from the Governor's Office of Strategic Planning and Budgeting presented the state's budget at Yuma City Hall. Presenters were Bill Greeney, Deputy Director, Alec Uleno, Analyst and Executive Assistant, and Zach Harris, Budget Analyst. As part of a statewide effort to engage with members of the community, the Governor's staff is holding briefings throughout Arizona to highlight his budget and policy priorities. However, some people expressed disappointment that the information wasn't more specific to our region. I was looking for more information on budget items that affect southwestern Arizona, said John Curtis, C-O-U-R-T-I-S, Executive Director of the Yuma County Chamber of Commerce. Curtis said, he had hoped to hear specifics on improved broadband, who, what, where, when, and how, and the one-time roadway spending project effects on the new USMCA, that is, the United States-Mexico-Canada trade agreement that recently replaced the 26-year-old NAFTA. I don't think the presenting team realized just how Maricopa-centric their information was, Curtis added. Nevertheless, Curtis and other attendees expressed appreciation to the governor's staff for bringing the presentation to Yuma. The Yuma County Chamber of Commerce really appreciates the effort of the governor's budget team to bring the information to Yuma County and present it to us in an easy-to-understand format. We appreciate the effort of the three gentlemen to come down, Curtis said. Among the budget items highlighted by the governor's staff were $608 million total new spending for K-12 public education, $175 million to provide additional 5% teacher pay raises, and $6 million to the 10 rural community college districts to meet the demand for career and technical education programs. The budget also includes $45 million to fully exempt military pension pay from income tax, saving the average Arizona veterans $840 annually. Another $416,400 would fund six additional veterans benefit counselor positions, mainly in rural communities. Greenlee also pointed out health and welfare funding, such as $6 million in ongoing funding from the Medical Marijuana Fund to provide critical access to opioid treatment services to uninsured and underinsured Arizonans. Ulano hided public safety funding, such as $7 million for wrong-way driving prevention and response, including $2 million to fund six new state troopers dedicated to the wrong-way driver night watch shift. The budget also proposes $5 million to deploy 1,267 body cameras for state troopers, $20 million to replace DPS patrol vehicles on a regular schedule, and $15 million to replace two aging DPS helicopters. Another $16 million would expand DPS radio infrastructure in northern Arizona and modernize existing technology in southern Arizona. Harris highlighted $8 million to develop a business one-stop portal that will provide a single online location to help citizens and business plan start growing and relocate businesses in Arizona, and $1 million to strengthen and grow Arizona's economy through travel and tourism promotion. He noted $12 million would go to enhance cybersecurity preparedness and incident response, and $10 million to triple funding for rural broadband grants. Infrastructure funding includes $59 million to lay conduit and fiber optic cable, as well as install smart highway technologies on I-17 between Sunset Point and Flagstaff, I-40 between the Arizona-New Mexico and Arizona-California borders, and I-19 between Tucson and Nogales. Our next story, also on the front page of today's Yuma Sun, it's entitled Ambitious. The full title is It Pays to Be Ambitious, District 1 Student Reigns as 2020 Yuma County Spelling Bee Champion. Written by Rachel Estes of the Yuma Sun. The 74th Annual Yuma County Spelling Bee, held Tuesday at Arizona Western College, showcased some of the region's best spellers, including Yuma School District 1's Juliet Gonzalez, G-O-N-Z-A-L-E-Z. the Castledome Middle School 8th grader topped 51 other contestants in 6 rounds with correct lettering for the words Afghan and medieval. Gonzalez trounced, which means to defeat decisively, per Merriam-Webster Dictionary, a variety of parts of speech from nouns and verbs to adjectives like cogently and petrifying. During their turn, spellers can ask the B's pronouncer to define their word or use it in a sentence before spelling it. But for petrifying, Gonzalez constructed her own. She said to the judges, "Standing here is petrifying," eliciting chuckles from the audience. When asked whether she expected the win, Gonzalez shyly smiled and nodded. "I was very ambitious," she said. In the first round, 8 spellers joined their parents in the audience, eliminated by words like jargon and gimmick and winsome and bombard. The pronouncer's list grew progressively more difficult, including terms like ragamuffin, QWERTY, malaise, uncouth, and acuity. The final round came down to Gonzalez and another District 1 student, 6th grader Madison Baker, from Ron Watson Middle School, when Rule 12 came into play. According to the Arizona Education Foundation's Rule 12, when a word is misspelled by one of the last 2 contestants standing, the word must be correctly spelled by the next contestant, who must also correctly spell the next word on the pronouncer's list in order to be declared the champion. The AEF's rules are similar to the rules of the Scripps National Spelling Bee, which all schools must be a member of to participate in county bees. One of Baker's last words, Krypton, was by far the hardest she had to spell, she said. Defined by Merriam-Webster as, "The noun is a colorless, gaseous element found in air and often used in electric lamps." "I was sweating on that one," Baker's dad, Jason Barker, said. "But she got through it without a problem, and she's made her mom and dad proud. We knew she would be one of the finalists." Though she's not headed to the state spelling bee, Madison is grateful to be the runner-up. "I feel amazing," she said. "I didn't expect to make it this far. The experience was nervous, challenging, and fun." As for Gonzalez, she found the adage, "Practice makes perfect," is tried and true. Using the dictionary and, in quotes, "spell it," an online study tool for school spelling bee champions, she prepared herself for success. "I started with the languages I didn't know, and if I got a word wrong, I kept coming back to it until I got it right," she said. She said she'll be preparing for the Arizona State Spelling Bee, held Saturday, March the 21st, in Phoenix, with the same energy. The last article on today's Yuma Sun front page is entitled, "Sunny Weather Ahead After Monday's Rain," written by James Gilbert of the Yuma Sun. Approximately 3/4 of an inch of rain fell on Monday's storm, which kept the Yuma area well below its average temperature for this time of the year, the National Weather Service reported. Meteorologist Isaac Smith said Monday's nighttime low was a chilly 52 degrees, while the daytime high of 62 was 11 degrees cooler than the normal daily average of 73. "It was an unusually cool day in the Yuma area," Smith said. "Due to the precipitation moving through the area, the temperatures really could warm up." Smith added that some parts of Yuma County received as much as an inch of rain and possibly even hail. Monday's rainfall also puts the Yuma area well above its yearly average. By this point in the year, the area typically receives about 1/2 inch. The rainfall, which lasted throughout most of the day, was caused by a band of precipitation that developed in the Yuma area. That same system, Smith added, went on to drench most of the southwest part of the state. Sergeant Laurie Franklin of the Yuma Police Department said, aside from a few traffic lights going out and some flooded streets, there were no reports of any significant damage. She added that there were also some traffic accidents, but no more than usual. Cold, dry air combined with leftover moisture also caused a dense fog on Tuesday morning, prompting the Yuma Fire Department to issue a warning on its Twitter feed before the sun came out and burned off the mist. The warning advised motorists to drive to arrive by slowing down and to leave extra space between their vehicle and the vehicle in front of them. Sergeant Edgar Guerra, G-U-E-R-R-A, of the Yuma County Sheriff's Office, reported that deputies responded to 4 non-injury weather-related traffic accidents on Monday afternoon, including several calls for vehicles that either slid off the road due to mud or got stuck in the mud. On Monday evening, deputies also reported 2 crashes in which the vehicles slid on mud into irrigation canals. With the system now out of the area, there is little chance of precipitation as daytime temperatures return to the mid to upper 60s on Wednesday and Thursday. Nighttime lows, however, will remain in the mid-40s. Friday brings warmer temperatures with sunny skies and calm winds and a high near 72. The warming up continues into the weekend with a high near 74 on Sunday. Also, wind gusts could reach as high as 25 miles per hour on Monday. We now move to the interior of today's Yuma Sun with an article entitled, Teacher Unions, Students Are Terrified by Active Shooter Drills. Comes to the Yuma Sun from the Associated Press, Dateline Hartford, Connecticut. The nation's 2 largest teachers' unions want schools to revise or eliminate active shooter drills, asserting Tuesday that they can harm students' mental health and that there are better ways to prepare for the possibility of a school shooting. The American Federation of Teachers and National Education Association joined with the advocacy group Every Town for Gun Safety Support Fund in calling for an end to unannounced drills or drills that simulate gun violence. Everywhere I travel, I hear from parents and educators about the active shooter drills terrifying students, leaving them unable to concentrate in the classroom and unable to sleep at night, said Lily Eccleston, E-S-K-E-L-S-E-N, Garcia, G-A-R-C-I-A, president of the National Education Association. Traumatizing students as we work to keep students safe from gun violence is not the answer. That is why if schools are going to do drills, they need to take steps to ensure the drills do more good than harm. The report released Tuesday recommends schools concentrate on training teachers to respond to an active shooter incident rather than drilling students. It also issued guidelines for schools that decide to use drills. Those include never simulating an actual shooting, giving parents, educators, and students advance notice of any drill, working with mental health officials to create age-appropriate and trauma-informed drills, and tracking the effects of drills. About 95% of schools drilled students on lockdown procedures in the 2015-16 school year, according to a survey by the National Center for Education Statistics. According to a recent study by the U.S. Secret Service, most school shootings last for 2 minutes or less, and nearly half of the events studied ended within 1 minute, he said in a written statement. That means it's up to us to keep ourselves safe for those seconds that will feel as slow as a lifetime. We drill so everyone has a plan when faced with danger to give people a chance at survival. But Abby Clements, who was teaching second grade at the Sandy Hook School in Newtown when a gunman killed 26 people in 2012, said she doesn't believe a drill would have saved lives. Our students knew what to do, said Clements, who now teaches at another elementary school in town. We taught them what to do in an emergency. We knew evacuation routes and where a safe spot was in the room where nobody could see inside. But frightening students with some type of active drill, I think that is barbaric. There is no way you could possibly be prepared for the infinite number of ways that a shooting could go down with these weapons of war. Our final article in today's broadcast is the guest column on the editorial page, written by Peter Roff, R-O-F-F. It's entitled, Keeping America's Telecom Sector Great. Washington, D.C., the race to the 5G generation of telecommunications technology is on. By 2035, it will be responsible for more than $13 trillion in global economic output. The nation getting the best technology to market the quickest will enjoy an incredible competitive advantage. For America to produce the first fully functional 5G network involves many things that must happen. The development of the hardware that will make things happen and the writing of software to control it is only part. Anything operating wirelessly, as many of these new applications will, needs enough clean spectrum to carry the load. Without it, the U.S. will end behind the Chinese and others who are already clearing the mid-range C-band, that's the letter C, of the electromagnetic spectrum, to deploy 5G. In the U.S., that space is occupied, allocated to satellite companies who are using it, putting the issue before the U.S. Federal Communications Commission, which has regulatory authority over the spectrum. The chairman of the FCC, Ajit Pai, P-A-I, has been a real leader in the campaign to keep the government from doing anything stupid that would slow the evolution of the Internet or hamper the technological progress needed to support it. Late last week, he announced his proposal for dealing with the C-band issue so the folks prepared to use it for the next level of what cyberspace can do can get it, and the folks who have it can be compensated adequately. To remove the potential roadblock to progress, the companies who've already made investments in C-band space need to be compensated fairly and have their relocation costs addressed. We're talking, of course, about a communal public asset regulated by the government, but that doesn't mean the feds can just take it back because it wants it for something else. It's only fair, Pai said, while revealing his plan, that every single reasonable cost should be covered. So under my draft rules, the winning bidders in the C-band auction would be required to reimburse satellite operators for their reasonable relocation costs. Some in Congress are also trying to make sure compensation happens, but on the cheap. Louisiana GOP Senator John Kennedy's SMART Act that would delay an FCC auction and unintentionally, to be sure, give the Chinese time to take a great leap forward on 5G faster than America can. His bill allocates just $5 billion in reimbursements to the companies involved as incentive to relocate to another part of the spectrum and grants them no more than $1 billion share in the revenues the auction is sure to generate. As an incentive to cooperate rather than sue, that's not much. Even Kennedy admits the auction could generate $60 billion in revenues, and that's probably a low estimate. A $5 or $6 billion buyout of a 40-year $50 billion investment in building out C-band-based businesses that currently provide content to 120 million U.S. households just won't cut it. The commission's scheduled to take up Chairman Pai's proposal on February 28. So far, under his leadership, it's been doing a lot of good things. The Pai-led FCC has been protecting a huge percentage of the economic growth that's occurred in the U.S. economy over the last several years, and we'll all benefit if his colleagues stand with him regarding what's to happen with the C-band spectrum. Trillions in future economic growth are at stake. He's found a way to thread the needle and keep everyone, the people to whom it is licensed and the people who want it, happy. If his proposal fails, or if the Kennedy plan is adopted by Congress, the whole thing almost surely ends up in litigation for years as someone else, probably the Chinese, take control of the world's telecommunications sector. We don't have forever. We must move fast. We need the private sector to lead the way to U.S. dominance in 5G. The federal government can't do it fast enough to beat the Chinese. President Trump and Chairman Pai need to offer a fair deal with real incentives which the taxpayers will ultimately benefit because of the jobs and wealth 5G global networks led by America will produce for us. Think of it as keeping America's telecom sector great. This concludes our broadcast of selected Yuma Sun articles pertinent to Yuma County. Please stay tuned for a broadcast of selected articles from the Wall Street Journal. Thanks for spending this half hour with me. I've certainly enjoyed hosting this program, and I hope you've found it a worthwhile addition to your daily life. I look forward to hosting many more news programs for you and any of your associates you might invite to listen in. If you wish to comment on this program, please feel free to submit your thoughts to SunSounds at telephone number 480-774-8300 or drop us a note at SunSounds of Arizona, 2323 West 14th Street, Tempe, Arizona, 85281. This is Lloyd Rain signing off from Yuma, and please remember, SunSounds is a member-supported service.